I want to see the team have the kind of fight that they had in 2016, even if we shocked the world!
Playing a Mexican team in the next round.
That's what I was about to say.
Howard and forward, Jack Price in goal!
And the Colorado Rapids, the team from the Rockies, have scaled their own mountain tonight. They are MLS Cup winners.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to another episode of Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. We are recording this on the afternoon of Wednesday, May 9th, Mark?
Yep.
Wednesday, May 9th. Rabbi Mark Goodman, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. We're doing good. What's new in your world?
Not that much. Checking out the relegation battle that we've got going on in the EPL. We're recording this right at the stroke of halftime of Huddersfield-Chelsea 0-0. Spoiler alert, I guess, for those of you who aren't keeping up with this and don't check the score before this ends up getting posted. But in any case, Mark, we've got a lot to talk about today.
Don't we always. I just wanted to point out, Matt is rooting for Huddersfield not to get relegated because they have an American coach. I think this is maybe the first time I've watched Huddersfield. Their away jerseys are awful. They're black and red stripes, but they kind of like did this weird thing with the border between the black and the red. We love to talk about kits on this pod. They did this thing where it kind of looks like, I don't know, like a Geiger counter, like a EKG machine between the red and the black with some white thrown in there. And
I see it.
It looks like trash, to be honest. It just doesn't look very good.
I mean, isn't that the first rule of the mid and lower tier teams in the Premier League, that your secondary kit has to be garbage?
Have the trash crest and the trash. I think the crests are the bigger problem. There are a lot of crests in like the lower leagues in England where they took like the city crest and then they jam-packed it with like 17 other things. So there's like a knight and a hammer and a pine cone and a tower, and they're all in there, and then they're kind of semi-monochromatic, and then the like resolution quality is low. I really love like League Two crests are generally bad. Mm-hmm. Like generally really, really bad.
Or you get the ones that are also way super, super simple. So you get like the Derby County one where it looks like a sheep, but it looks like it was drawn by a 7-year-old.
I like that one.
But it's been there for 70 years, so it's like, well, we can't change it because it's been, you know, it's iconic because it's timeless, and it's timeless because it's old.
I mean, to be fair, like almost all of them are better than the Rapids' original badge, which was like an old school soccer ball. Like if you're using a black and white 1970s soccer ball and it's like the dominant thing in your crest, you got problems. By the way, I don't like the old like 1950s leather ball either in your crest. I think if you've got that ball with like the, I don't know, it's got like three seams going one way and three seams going the other.
It's an 18-point ball because it's made of 18 pieces of leather.
Check out the big brain on Matt. 18-point ball. I'm going to use that from now on in literary circles and see if other people can keep up with me. No, I think it looks weird. Like I'm trying to think if there's any badge I know that has that on there. Like Total Soccer Show. They use it as like a big point in their crest for their podcast show, and I don't like it. Anyways, we're moving on.
Moving on. In any case, Mark, speaking of teams that also had very, very poor original logos in Major League Soccer, the Colorado Rapids were unfortunately defeated on Saturday.
By the KC Wiz.
By the KC Wiz, Sporting Kansas City, as they are known in the contemporary era of all of what they've been the Sporting Kansas City for, what, 8-9 years now. The score was 1-0, but it could have been a lot worse, in my opinion, Mark. Daniel Shallowy cleans up an opportunity off the post after a nice cross into the middle. All three center backs get burned. He buries that in the 16th minute. Sporting Kansas City continues to high-press the Rapids when they don't win. The Rapids have the ball. When Sporting Kansas City has the ball, they are overlapping and they overrun the Rapids with numbers and just overall speed. Bobby Warsaw had a really, really good article about the rotation scheme and how Graham Zusi's been involved in the attack, in which he probably had one of his better games of the season, despite not getting on the score sheet, and pretty much held Edgar Castillo in check. So really, really a poor game, and in my opinion, a poor performance for the Rapids, but it could have been a lot worse, and there are a lot of teams that I think were a lot better than the Rapids last year that go into this Sporting Park and get absolutely slaughtered at this point.
Did you see the expected goals on that game?
Was it like 2.3 to like And then it was like one big dot for Baji's opportunity. Yeah. And that was it.
It was worse than that. It was 2.65 for Kansas City, and it was 0.61 for the Rapids. And Baji's one big chance was worth 0.25. So take that out, and it's worth 0.3. The Rapids generated shots worthy of 0.36 of offense. They took 10 total shots, but most of them were blocked. Only 5 of them, other than Baji's shot, were, you know, either on frame or off frame. And they had a total net expected goals of 0.36, which, like, sometimes a 0.36 will go in, but generally not. So basically, mm-hmm. the Rapids did not generate a lot of offense.
As Mark mentioned, an opportunity off of a turnover, I want to say, in the mid-80s minutes that Baji had and puts it just a couple feet wide of the post was a really golden opportunity, and that's all the Rapids offense really had to say. Mark, I'm assuming there's not a whole lot good to talk about. What was your good thing from Saturday's loss?
I always start the good thing when we lose with were there any really good things? Wow. It's hard to say that nothing was really good about that game. I mean, Enzo Martinez had a really nice turn at one point. I mean, that's how micro I'm going here. He just has these moments where he gets the ball and you look and you're like, he doesn't have any outlets, and he just does a thing where he turns and takes a touch, or he plays it. Like, he generally doesn't want to play it backwards. He generally will reset and take a dribble in an innovative direction in order to create something new. So I just saw him doing that a lot. The weird thing that was related to that is that the team in the second half spread the field very wide in order to kind of get going into the front attacking field as quickly as they could, and they really struggled to kind of connect that. So it depended a lot on guys like Jack Price, Enzo Martinez, and the back three really doing something with the ball, which was a challenge. I don't think that really worked, but I do think one more good thing, I guess, is that they were entrusting the back three with a lot of, like, picking out passes and starting the attack. And they did okay with that. What was your good thing?
Sam Nicholson gets his debut for the Colorado Rapids, traded, I want to say, within 48 hours of, no, excuse me, it was on Saturday, so no, it was 4 or 5 days from when he initially got traded, brought in to be more of an attacking piece. And I know, Mark, last week we kind of had the question of what does Hudson and the organization see from Sam Nicholson? Is he a number 10-ish in the middle that can play? Do they see him as a backup to Edgar Castillo? I'm still not convinced that this team has a backup for Edgar Castillo other than Kip Colvey playing on his offside, so to speak. But I thought Nicholson had a couple really good moments. But, you know, other than that, I don't have a whole lot good to say, as we talked about it statistically. I was thinking about this a little bit and how I wanted to analyze the game. I feel like Sporting Kansas City right now, you know, they just gave Peter Ramiz the contract extension, you know, and everything. They are, I think, what the Rapids are aspiring to be. A team in a relatively small MLS market, at least as far as the MLS teams and the size of the markets and the size of the soccer markets are concerned. They're on a budget similar to what the Rapids are on, and then they're aspiring to be really efficient with their international pickups, have a couple really good veteran Americans, and then, you know, everything at least that you've covered on the Academy more so than I have has been wanting to bring up that next crop, whether it's Courtney Ford and Dylan Serna or all the kids they have in the pipeline who've been starting to get more integrated with the senior team that we've seen a little bit more, Trevor Mallory and a few other players as well. So, you know, I think Sporting Kansas City is, you know, in the prime of where I think the Rapids are aspiring to be in 3 to 4 years. And I don't think there's anything ashamed about losing to a team that's just better than you and has been a little bit more developed in terms of their plan and structure and everything. And the fact is, we said, you know, a lot of other teams that did a lot better than the Rapids last year would have gone into this game and absolutely get slaughtered. And I think, you know, other than, you know, Sporting Kansas City having to play at Atlanta, you know, later today, I think, you know, there are a lot of teams that are going to be taken to the woodshed. Rapids only lost 1-0. Baji has that point going in. We're talking about how the Rapids stole a point and robbed Sporting Kansas City of two.
Speaking of this week, it's a double game week for about 8 teams in Major League Soccer this week. Maybe it's 6. But there are a lot of teams that the narrative coming in next week for them is going to be, oh, they dropped both games. They dropped them badly. Everything's falling apart, you know, because, like, you lose 2 games this weekend and a couple of your rivals win both of their games or win one of their games, And we could see teams drop 6, 7, 8 spots in the table in their respective conferences just this week. So it's always important to keep in mind that we're still in the early end of the season. I mean, Seattle Sounders in 2016 were really poor at this stage of the game. And, you know, they're not the only team to be exceedingly behind at some point and then kind of pull it together. So I wouldn't, so, but that being said, I'm very excited the Rapids don't have a double game week this week because, you know, we as Rapids fans are kind of preternaturally disposed to panicking, especially when we get a couple bad results. Can you imagine, Matt, if we had two games this week and we dropped them both, putting us in a 5-game losing tailspin? I mean, if we lose one game over the weekend, we're not there yet, but if we lose one, it'll be like, all right, well, you know, the Red Bulls are a very good team. But if we had a Wednesday and a Saturday and we were suddenly into a 5-game skid, people start talking about the Mastroeni era and not in a good way.
I am a pragmatist and I definitely maintain things for the long haul in that sense. So I am not one who, I aspire to not be a victim of what have I just seen.
Yeah.
Unlike the whole of the internet, including but not limited to, I'd say Rapids Twitter, and I would say at least 60% of the other MLS team specific Twitters out there. Like,
for sure.
Like Red Bull fans in the span of the last, like, between the Chivas game and now have gone from celebrating as if they finally won their first ever MLS Cup to the sky is falling, fire everyone.
Seattle Twitter and Galaxy Twitter are both in really bad shape right now. So, all right, Matt, what was your bad thing from this week?
We've talked about a lot of them.
I haven't even started on my bad things yet.
Okay, so first of all, Dominic Baggi missing that spot. I wrote a great analysis piece on this game for Last Word on Soccer that you should all check out. But one of the main keys that I pointed out as I tweeted out the chalkboard for all three of the collecting wingbacks. So Edgar Castillo, who manned the left flank for the entirety of the game, and then Kip Colby, who I think was in for 79, and then Dylan Serna for the last 11. And basically, there's almost nothing after. There's four total actions in the offensive third. There's maybe 10 at the most in the Sporting Kansas City half of the game, and then everything else are scrambling defensive actions in their own defensive third, or just back passes or sideways passes. Yeah. Collectively, the high press of Sporting Kansas City absolutely eviscerated any build-up play that the Rapids were remotely trying to do from a wide position. The wingbacks were not in position to help out their center backs when they were getting overrun. Yep. They were not in position to be outlets for possession when the center backs were being overwhelmed with possession. And guess who the Rapids are playing on Saturday, Mark? And guess what they do even better than Sporting Kansas City?
The Red Bulls and high press.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was bad, and unless Anthony Hudson and company are able to figure it out this week in training, Saturday could be just as, if not more, ugly.
It's really interesting. It's you know, we're all adjusting to, as Colorado fans who predominantly watch this team. I've watched a lot of teams over the last 4 years, but, you know, I don't have the same brain functioning when I watch other teams. So when I watch, so this is the first year I've ever had a chance to watch the 5-3-2 and how it responds to different setups. So this is an opportunity to watch how a 5-3-2 reacts to a very aggressive high press. So that should be interesting. My bad thing for this game was Jack McBean starting up top, which was pretty surprising. And obviously I wrote a longer article this week about why the lineup decisions have been a bit baffling. Abby Mood did a really nice interview with Coach Hudson about some of those issues. And Matt, you mentioned it, and Matt Perry over at Burgundy Wave also covered it. So there's a lot of kind of questions going on. Jack McBean was apparently there because nobody else was really ideal and available in this situation. Yannick Bolli's not fully match fit. He didn't come in fully fit from you know, coming back from a Chinese team where he was essentially on his off season, so he was kind of preseasoning early in. Yeah.
Hudson described Yannick Bolli as being miles away from 90 minutes fit this week.
That's a bit of honesty that we kind of appreciate. And the other option, of course, of Joe Mason, I guess they just thought was physically not exactly the ideal matchup. They probably wanted someone who was a big body, headable kind of guy like Jack McBean. But I don't think Jack McBean has earned a starting spot. I don't think he's played particularly well. His passing is poor. His passing last season was also poor. And it reflected oddly on the team. That was just one of the two lineup decisions that was baffling. The other baffling lineup decision was in the week after Dylan Cerna has a really good final 15 minutes. Against Orlando, Kip Colvey gets a start. And Kip Colvey's not a bad soccer player. He just hasn't shown us anything. So the question then becomes, like, why is he starting? The assumption for me is he must be doing something amazing in practice, or there must be some magical number that Porrick Smith is sitting on that shows that he is statistically capable of X, Y, or Z, and we're just waiting to see that on the field. Of course, for Colorado fans, what we saw on the field was in around the 70-something minute, he got the ball down the sideline and just very poorly dribbled it out of bounds. And then a few minutes later, he was fired a sharp pass, which a normal soccer player settles with the right foot and turns upfield, and he just biffed it really badly, bonked the ball backwards, and the whole offense had to reset because he couldn't field the simple pass. And it looked really bad, and that's not a really good look for Colorado, and it reflects poorly on everybody. It basically reflects on the team as, this is the best 11 guys we could roll out. And for a lot of fans, the answer is, no, it's not. We have other guys who can do well. We're not quite sure what's going on there. So some of that's a rehash of things I've already written, but I still think it needed a finer point on it to kind of go into on the deep end. So those are the bad things, which was, like, we didn't play very well, but on top of that, we didn't even seem to be starting our best 11 players.
Totally off topic here, Mark. You are right. Those secondary kits for Huddersfield are absolutely abhorrent. But
close up. From far away, they're all right.
As soon as Huddersfield stays up, I think they should gather all of the secondary kits in their team shop and all the ones the players have wear and just sort of burn it in a ritual sacrifice in order to appease the football gods for next season. Okay, Mark, I'm going to agree with you on that point. I don't want to steal Abby's quote because she really asked some really good questions. So head on over to Burgundy Way for the full Anthony Hudson breakdown of why Jack McBean started on Saturday. I think based on that decision, however, the goal was essentially to go in there and root one Sporting Kansas City to death, so to speak. And, you know, say what you will about Jack McBean, I think of the forwards in camp, right, of the forwards in the team right now, he is probably the best header of the ball, and he's certainly the most physical when it comes to aerial duels, so to speak. That said, Mark, I don't really think he does anything elsewhere. I would classify him as a place where possession goes to die, so to speak. He's not really converted on any of the sniffs that he's had with doing anything from headers, either in possession or in the box to be a threat to actually score goals. So yes, he does headers better in the sense that he's the only one who's not terrible, but would you rather have somebody who's meh at something and bad at everything else, or bad at headers and virtually better at everything else, so to speak? So, you know, if you're in a relegation dogfight and you got to go to Manchester City and you're hoping for a 0-0 draw, maybe you throw out your route one number nine there and hope that it works, so to speak. But other than that, I'm going to agree with everything that you said. I think as soon as Bowley and Gotchian, we're gonna have a full Ask HDHL session of hashtag Eignergate, folks, later on. As soon as that happens, I think Jack McBean is not in the 18 for the foreseeable future for the Raptors. And I'm gonna agree with you on the notion of Kip Colvey. I think I have a beat on what that statistical number you think that's key for Kip Colvey starting the lineup. Do you want to guess what it is, Mark?
Well, I heard a rumor about it, but I'm interested in what you think it is.
Oh, well, mine's way more cynical.
Go ahead.
It's a plus 64.
Which is
the country dialing code for New Zealand.
Wow, that is some shade.
Yes.
That is some Kiwi shade.
Yes. So, I mean, I agree with you. I thought Dylan Cerna would have done a whole lot offensively. To be fair to Kip, he was not given a fair shake, in my opinion, by Dominic Kinnear when he was at San Jose Earthquakes, and ultimately when you have a player, you know, hasn't had a whole lot of opportunities to play, ultimately they need to work through those issues. Way to go, Huddersfield!
Oh, man.
Let's go, baby! David Wagner staying up! Any case, so when you haven't had those opportunities, you really need to, you know, you need to work through the kinks, so to speak, and maybe he sees Kip Colvey as like that player you buy in FIFA who's like in the high 60s but has a potential in the 80s or 90s, and you start him at 19 even though they're going to be terrible, because if they're playing and starting regularly, they're going to grow by plus 5 on a year basis.
For sure. I don't think Colvey was bad. I mean, except for those little gaffes. I don't think Colvey was bad at all. It's just that we had only a couple players on the field who were significant contributors in this game, and a whole lot of meh. A whole yes. lot of kind of, you know, not getting into important spaces, not making important runs, not making dangerous passes. And we just need more of those guys. We can't have Jack Price and Dominic Baggi and Enzo Martinez do the heavy lifting every week. We need 11 guys doing the heavy lifting, because Sporting basically has 11 guys coming at you on all cylinders. I mean, nobody knew anything or cared about Johnny Russell before the season, and he put a hurtin' on LA Galaxy a couple weeks ago with a hat trick. I mean, like, yes, they are clicking on. I mean, they're at the point where Gerso, who is a pretty decent player, is sitting on the bench. You know, like,
yes.
That's impressive. And that's, to finish off the idea, that's my, I would say, my big thing, which is that SKC is a really good football team. Losing to them is not a full-blown catastrophe. I think the way in which we lost to them was embarrassing and poor, but the fact that we lost to Sporting Kansas City, I'm okay with. I think it was, they're a very good team. We're going to lose to some very good teams. We're going to need to start beating mediocre teams, and we're going to start needing to draw very good teams, unless we have no plans of making the playoffs.
Retweet that on all fronts, Mark. My big thing, I've kind of pressed on it. You know, it's the high press. The Rapids did not handle the high press very well at all. You look at it statistically or visually, they're coming up against the Red Bulls who are going to high press them. And, you know, I wonder, you know, this also is my first season. I got a little bit fascinated with the 3-5-2 when Greg Vanney started experimenting with it now, two MLS seasons ago towards the end and through into the playoffs for Toronto FC the first time they made MLS Cup when they lost to Seattle, on penalty kicks.
I think on that point, Enzo and Jack play out of pressure extremely well. I think Tommy Smith does too, although he's a little bit, too quick to go long ball. It's the rest of the team, again, going back to this, it's the rest of the team that I'm concerned with in high press. This is, the Red Bulls will not be the first high press team we've seen. We've seen a couple other games this season where the high press was used, and it doesn't look good. The thing that the high press does, other than potentially force a turnover in your own end, is it forces you to play the ball back to your goalkeeper or to one of your center backs and go long ball, which almost always results in losing possession,
yes.
right? It's not necessarily about forcing a high turnover for a goal. It's also about forcing you to turn over the ball and to just not be able to build out of the back. And we've talked to Hudson, and he's very excited about build-up play. He wants to build out of the back. Playing out of high press from the back is a challenge, and you need the talent on the field to do
yes.
it, and I don't know if we're going to be able to do it.
And tactically, I do not think that they were prepared for that against Sporting. The, you know, we've talked a lot about possession and possession with a purpose on this podcast, and the goal of the high press from a defensive standpoint is to not give you possession with a purpose,
right.
Mark. It's really similar to, it's like a chess for me, it's like a chess strategy where everything that you do is just to put the opponent in check.
Yeah, exactly.
So that even though you might not be taking
don't
any
let
pieces,
them play. Don't
yes.
let them have their game. They're just playing. They're just responding.
You
exactly.
have the ball, but you
exactly.
are on the back foot. And the Rapids, every time they had the ball, was on the back foot. Now, how do you go about handling that? You need to spread things out. You need to have easy outlets to relieve possession, forcing the high press to expand. That creates space that allows you to build up. And with the center backs on the back foot, with the wing backs not getting forward enough and not enough work from the midfield, really other than Jack Price, in my opinion, from a possession buildup standpoint, and, you know, Jack Price being a place where possession goes to die, they just didn't have enough.
You also need to be capable of either dribbling out of pressure or playing a 1-2 out of pressure,
yes.
which means you have to come into the game knowing that you're going to play the 1-2 and having players. So that's the challenge of what you just said, which is you said spread the field a little bit, which can work. It's another way of doing things. But you need also, when you're playing a 1-2 to get out of high press, you need to know where the player is going to drop, which means practice is important. I'm just going to – a slight anecdote. I was an assistant high school basketball coach for a number of years, and we were on the road against a big public school down in Pacifica in Northern California. And we had a ref who was from the local area who was really making egregious bad calls. And we were up by 20, and we started to lose the game moment by moment because they put us into a full court press and we couldn't break it. The coach got to the point where he called timeout like 3 or 4 times in a row, and he had the whiteboard and the white pen, and he was just showing them the exact same play over and over again, which they were not executing. And at some point, he's just screaming, my coach, is screaming on the sideline, and he's taking the felt tip pen and pounding it into the board to the point that the pen snapped in two, because he just needed them to execute the one play that gets you out of press. Basketball and soccer have a lot of similarities and a few differences, but you need to be able to have 2 or 3 get-out-of-the-press situation plays, and I hope that they can do that.
Absolutely, Mark. Moving on, this coming Saturday, the Rapids will be hosting New York Red Bulls at 7 p.m. at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. Mark, the Red Bulls are a very, very good team. They just won their big Hudson River Derby on Saturday, completely outclassing NYCFC, who I think a number of people had pegged as the best team in MLS so far. They won that by a score of 5-0. We've talked about what they do from a high press standpoint. Won't recap or review the team too much, as I'm assuming most of our listeners are familiar from them at this point. They have Bradley Wright Phillips, who a number of the new players in the Rapids will be familiar with from the lower divisions in England. Tommy Smith has played against him. I believe Sam Nicholson said that he has played against him and possibly with him. Danny Wilson should be familiar. Jack Price is obviously familiar with him. BWP was at, I believe, Charlton Athletic before coming to Major League Soccer. They have Tyler Adams, who's kind of the new center midfield number 8-ish player for the U.S. men's national team, who pundits have been gushing over. They have Kaku, whose full name is Alejandro Romero Gamarra, who has been absolutely killing it, their big offseason acquisition. They've got Tim Parker, formerly of the Vancouver Whitecaps, and then, of course, they've got the Iron Man in goal, Luis Robles. Mark, this is a very well-built team. This is a team with depth. This is a team that executes Jesse Marsh's vision to a T, and they've got a number of really good homegrowns who can fill in should any of their starters not be doing anything or they pick up any injuries. What are you seeing from this team, and how the heck do the Rapids get 3 points against them?
I think one of the things that you said is a thing that I want to highlight, which is their depth. The week after they played one of their either quarterfinal or semifinal games, probably both,
they essentially played their USL team.
Against CCL, they played their USL team, and Ben Mines, who's 17 years old, had his first goal. Alex Mule, Derek Etienne, Vincent Bezicourt. These are guys who are starting level players for a lot of Major League Soccer teams, and they either come off the bench or may not start this week. You've got Tyler Adams, who apparently this week has drawn some interest from a team in Belgium as a high-priced transfer. Florian Velo is a young guy who
they picked up off the scrap heap because he didn't get drafted.
And he had a fantastic week this past week. And then, you know, you've got a really deep squad that's going to be very difficult to break down. And I didn't even mention BWP yet. So it's a very talented team. They play a very interesting style for those of you who may not pay attention a lot to the Eastern Conference. They were starting last year in what the Red Bull international kind of setup is. So Red Bull Salzburg, Red Bull New York, and Red Bull
Leipzig.
Very good. I almost missed the big German team. We're all running a 4-2-2-2, which basically has your kind of attacking midfielders either spreading wide or playing as a box or kind of like, you know, playing in like a trapezoid with the D mids. And then connecting up to the top. That's how they started last year. It didn't really work for them. So Jesse Marsh went to a slightly different setup, which is like a 3-3-3-1. BWP's that one. And those threes can kind of either jigsaw, into like an offset kind of shape, or you can push the two wide midfielders back so that it kind of winds up looking like a 5-3-2, or you can really use it to jam up midfield and overwhelm numbers in midfield. But, you know, and on top of their having a very innovative formation that's difficult to deal with for the Rapids, they also are extremely good in transition. A number of goals have just been get the ball to BWP by himself against two defenders in space or have him split the center backs and he'll just do it. He is comfortable poaching. He's comfortable with the ball at his feet and dribbling in a bit of space. And it's a very, very dangerous team. I would say the keys for the Rapids are both deal with the high press and maybe break it. And the second thing is, do not get exposed in transition. And that, those are the kinds of things you hear on sports radio, all the time. Like, oh, if they could just do these two things, they'll be great. Those are very hard to do because, you know, not getting exposed in transition might be the most important thing in soccer that most teams can't do very well.
Yep.
It's really, really difficult because players get pulled out of position and suddenly they're either overloaded on one direction or overloaded to one side and one beautiful pass over the top and BWP just scored on you. So it's really a challenge, but if that's, those are the two things they've got to do. The nice weapon, against transition that Colorado has that is exceptional is Jack Price. Jack Price is really good at reading when one of his defenders has moved up. Jack Price is really, really good at getting back. He's a good emergency defender too. So that's the one thing I can think is hopeful. My thought about this game though is Colorado's best hope is for like a draw on the road, a 1-1 draw or a 2-2 draw. It is a lot to ask to completely shut this team down. And it is a lot to ask to go on the road and be good at in New Jersey against this team.
Mark the games at Dick's Sporting Goods Park.
Just kidding. I'll take that back. Wait, it's a home game. That's right. It's the week after when they're at in New York.
Yes.
Scratch that. Reverse it. It's a home game. We've totally got this. It's going to be a 1-1 draw.
Okay, then. Just one other stat to throw out there, Mark. You know, I know BWP is known for his goal-scoring record, and I think it's if he does another I think if he plays this season and then another season at his similar pace, he'll get to 100 goal, or excuse me, he's already at 92 goals, but if he plays another three seasons after this at his current pace, unlikely with his age, he'll actually surpass both where Chris Wondolowski was supposedly going to get to and Landon Donovan for number of goals in the league. So that's outstanding. Other thing about him, he's got 6 goals and 5 starts in 8 games this season. He's also got 4 assists. So as good as he is at scoring goals himself, he's also extremely good at drawing opponents to him and then setting up his teammates for tap-ins, whether it was Kaku
that's
in the first one. I think he has 2 assists on both goals for Floor and Velo as well. And so, you know, 6 goals and 4 assists in 473 minutes, that's basically averaging almost 2 goal contributions per 90 minutes, which is pretty good. So, you know, I think the Rapids have to do a lot better job in the high press, as we mentioned, Mark. The only other thing that I think the Rapids could really do a good job of, other than Aurelien Collin and Luis Robles, of course, in goal, the Red Bulls don't really have a whole lot of good defensive aerial threats. And we've seen the Rapids come so close, and I want to say the last 3 or 4 games on corners, you know, Tommy Smith is going to get a header in sometime this season. At some point, we've seen Dominic Baggi come close, whether it's Danny Wilson or Axel Højbjerg in the middle there, you know, potentially going to get something as well. You know, they've hit a couple posts, they've gotten a couple of opportunities. If they can do something on set pieces, on corners in particular, especially if Aurelien Collin is not starting, this is going to be a huge opportunity for them to get a goal from a restart, so to speak, and I feel like that has been coming for them. But
yep.
Other than that, I think that's everything on the Red Bulls. Okay, Mark, what questions do you have for me from Field 20 as I was at training yesterday, Tuesday the 8th?
You should read Matt's injury update from Last Word on Soccer. It's really, really good. But what is your take? What was your understanding of how far away some of the injured players are?
So I would say Johan Blomberg and Skel Shingashi are going to be reevaluated sometime later today, and whether or not it's known publicly or the media is able to find out about it, I think by Friday that training the Rapids medical staff are going to know whether or not Gashi and Blomberg are able to go. And if they're able to go, I think they will be in the 18, most probably. Who am I missing here? Nana Boateng, I think, is still a decent ways away. I'd probably put, he was in training yesterday, folks. The first thing, based on precedent we have with the MLS concussion protocol, is, are they allowed to run? Are they allowed to do training athletic drills? And then are they allowed to do any sort of header ball with the work, no matter how light? Nana Boateng was doing all three of those things, Mark. So I think he is progressing tremendously. I still think that there's no timetable for him whatsoever. It's going to be, when is he cleared from a medical standpoint, and when does he feel okay to come back into the game? I would say Court Ford and Marlon Hairston are both still about a week away or two. I would put them as doubtful for this coming Saturday, but in terms of, like, say, next Tuesday or Wednesday of next week, I would put them as most probable, like 90% of getting back in with the team squad, so to speak. Both have been progressing tremendously throughout the last couple weeks. They haven't done any team training, but they've all been doing running. They've been doing ball work. They're both on their way back, so to speak. Who am I missing from an injury standpoint?
I think you got everybody. My other question, I guess, is, was there anything you saw in terms of what drills, activities, yes, or trainings that they were working on that you thought were notable, that were either different or interesting?
Absolutely. The Rapids men in the team scrimmages, so I mentioned, you know, all of the players who I just mentioned, for most part, were doing individual work, or there was a point in which Court Ford and Nana Boateng were kind of doing reps, where, like, one of them would do a movement drill, the other would rest, and then they'd switch off, so to speak. So it'd be like almost like spotting each other at the gym, so to speak, with those. But other than that, everybody else was doing team drills. And Mark, it was a lot of high pressing the opponent to get the ball back, and then also, how do you defend the high press? So on both sides, from the standpoint of, you know, the first teamers against the reserves, I presume, trying to mimic the New York Red Bulls, of how do we try and press them in order to get the ball back? And when we've got the ball, how do we work our build-up play when we are canning high press? And I saw a lot better movement from the wingbacks. I saw the goalkeepers get a lot more involved, and not just in a, oh, I'm in trouble, I'm going to pass back to Tim Howard and he's going to hoof it forward and hope for the best. There seemed to be a more systematic approach to it, and they seemed to be a lot more prepared. They knew what they were going to do, and they were practicing that rather than, oh, freaking out, cleared out of balance and hope for the best, so to speak.
Excellent.
So on both sides of the ball, I think the Rapids are going to be better at handling when the New York Red Bulls rotation, when they are in possession. And when the Rapids are in possession, I think they'll be a little bit better from their build-up play, building out of the back, in terms of being able to handle and get out of those precarious situations that the Red Bulls put New York City FC in and ultimately eviscerated them with. So we gave injury updates. We talked about high press a little bit. Mark, do you want to laugh at my little snuff with the press time that we had with Anthony Hudson?
I wasn't gonna, but I'll bring it up now that you bring it up. Since you're gonna drag yourself, I'll happily join in. Marco Cummings retweeted this little clip that you guys should go check out. Marco covers the Rapids for MLS.com and for Pro Soccer USA. You should check him out because he's a great writer. Apparently, when asking about Sam Nicholson, Matt got confused and was thinking about Jack Price. Did a portmanteau of both of them, which gives you Jack Nicholson. I want you to hold it. I want you to hold it between your knees. That's a 5Z Pieces reference, people. Coach Hudson did a bit of a double take, which is pretty funny.
So he was very confused. The press gave me a good laugh, I think.
Favorite Jack Nicholson movie?
What is my favorite Jack Nicholson movie? Just because I read it and it was really, really good in high school, and I thought the movie was also good, gotta give a shout out to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I would say I'm young enough to where there are other iterations of the Batman movie franchises that I do not personally care for his, there's his take on the Joker, I think, is unique and distinct and worthy of being in Joker canon. It's not my personal favorite of the Jokers who've played it either in animation or, in live action movies, so to speak. Who am I missing? The recent one that he did with Morgan Freeman, where they're both dying. I think it's Bucket List, or it's about their bucket list.
Really?
Yeah.
You like stuff like that?
Well, I thought the two characters were hilarious together, and like the dynamic between them. Overall, I thought the movie was average, man, at best. Jack Nicholson's character wasn't that good. And then I've got to give, maybe not for the movie as a whole, but what's the one with him and Tom Cruise in the courthouse, and You Can't Handle the Truth?
Few Good Men.
Few Good Men. I think that's probably, in terms of like an individual, you know, if I were to pick a highlight of a single play of Jack Nicholson, it's my favorite. That one's a pretty solid one.
So you have a good handle on the entire Jack Nicholson repertoire, which explains why. Do you think there's any relation between Jack and Sam?
I'm gonna highly doubtful.
Maybe way back.
Okay, way back in the same
400,
sense that
400 years ago.
Yeah, and we go back another 500, and Porrig Smith and Tommy Smith were related. But in any case,
probably not. They both were just blacksmiths in their own little towns.
Okay, yeah. So speaking of Sam Nicholson, folks, I got a chance to speak with him one on one after training on Tuesday. So now we'll play that audio for you. Not anything crazy or revolutionary. Just a couple questions with him and an absolutely beautiful Scottish accent from the newest member of the Colorado Rapids. Here's me and Sam Nicholson. So first of all, your thoughts on the week or so you've been in Colorado and your debut on Saturday?
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. I've obviously got to know my teammates over the week and so on. I'm really enjoying it. The game, we never got the result that we wanted, but I thought it was we obviously played well and I thought we deserved something out of it.
Hudson, first-year head coach, bringing in a very different system tactically. A lot of your teammates are learning it. You're learning, you know, the 3-5-2 on a fly. What's that been like? How are you approaching this?
It's been good. I mean, he's been clear with his instructions, and so's all the coaching staff, to be fair. They've been running it through me, so it's just about me trying to adapt it as quick as possible, and they've definitely helped me, and so the players. So, I really like it. I really enjoy this system, so hopefully... We've got many more games.
How different is it from when you've played before? Did you play the 3-5-2 in Scotland at all?
Only once. I've only played it once. Mm-hmm. But yes, I mean, it's more. To be honest, it's more to detail here. Mm-hmm. Like it's more detailed for us and stuff, which obviously the players need. So it helps us massively.
Mm-hmm. New locker room, but you've got a familiar face in Danny Wilson. How have you been getting on with the lads?
Good. Yeah, all the guys have been really, really friendly. They've been really welcoming, so I appreciate everything that they've all done. So I'm really enjoying it here, and I'm really looking forward to the months to come.
Hudson's still kind of developing the role assignments for the three-man center midfields. What do you see as your role there? What can you bring to the team that's maybe different?
Well, hopefully a bit more attacking and stuff and getting into good areas in the opposite half and try to get some goals and assists, obviously. But, yeah, I mean... Once I get more used to the formation and the tactics and stuff, hopefully that will come. So I'm looking forward to it.
New York Red Bulls had a big win on Saturday when they had their derby match against New York City FC. What do you see from them as a team? How do you guys shut them down?
No, they're a good side. They've always been a good side. They're hard to play against. So I think if we all do our jobs and work as hard as we have been, then we can get something from the game.
Okay. Thank you for your time, Sam.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Welcome back, listeners, to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. My name is Matt Pollard. Mark, we don't have a whole lot of Ask HTHLs in terms of individual rapid-fire questions, so to speak, but there is a general subject matter that has been brooding amongst MLS Twitter, amongst Rapids Twitter. We have gotten questions about it. We've had discussions about it. I've gotten a couple really crazy but intriguing DM threads about it with people saying some pretty outrageous stuff. So I think we've got to give this thing a name at this point, and I think the only one to go with is it's hashtag Eignergate.
It's Eignergate.
So just to recap, for those of you who've been living under a rock, Stefan Eigner has been in the 18 for a grand total of 2 competitive matches for the Colorado Rapids. He was an unused sub in leg 1 of their Champions League bout against Toronto FC. He came off the bench against the Philadelphia Union for 11 minutes after the Rapids pretty much had that game in control. I and others have reported on some... training conversations that were less than harmonious between him and the coaching staff, namely Anthony Hudson, and Eigner's place both in training has been precarious since then, and he has not featured in the 18 whatsoever. He's been in and out of training. He was at training briefly, yesterday on Tuesday, Mark. But in any case, this is something that has been brooding amongst, the fan base. It's been something that has been less than easy in order to get straight answers out of and clarity from the club on that front. And it's not a topic that Anthony Hudson likes to discuss in detail or letting people into the actual situation. He's been very clear that he and the player are in communications and that is between the two of them, and he kind of wants to keep it that way. The angry mob on Twitter is certainly wanting a little bit more clarification and has tried to put pressure on the people with access to the club to try and find out information, so to speak. But in any case, the third highest paid player and their biggest acquisition of calendar year 2017 has played a grand total of 11 minutes. He was supposed to be this big attacking piece, and he's not featured in the team. So either he is dead weight or being misused, or there's just some serious conflicts going on, so to speak, and we are going to try and make sense of that in the final 10 minutes right. We have on this pod.
So you laid out two there, and I'll add a third, okay? The third is really an iteration of the other two. Option one, he's not good enough to play with the other players, and the coach is just generally selecting other players over him because it's what would make the team best. So we'll delve into that in a second. Option two, the training field beef from 5 or so weeks ago has really not been solved. That the coach has a grudge, and until Eigner and Hudson go into couples therapy together, there will be no resolution to this problem. Option three is that he is pretty much on the market and that he is basically done. Like that the team is not putting him in the lineup because they're working on a trade or sale deal. Now, the sale deal would be the obvious since inside MLS, everything's shut down until July because that's when the second transfer window
opens.
That's
for players coming in. The transfer window only matters for where you're going to. So if there's a transfer market that's open in another league elsewhere,
you
go elsewhere.
Exactly, which is why an MLS team can't pick up Eigner from another MLS team.
Yes.
They can bring a player up or down from USL or from wherever else, but they can't sign a new player. Yes. So yeah, Eigner can go out. The other thing is, and obvious, this is fairly obvious, but Eigner can't go into a team that desperately needs him in a relegation scrap at the very end because the windows are closed in Europe. Mm-hmm. His basic option is essentially to be kind of, you know, sold or released quietly when the European window opens, which I think is July 1st. So those are the three options is as I see it. So Matt, how are you holding? What's your sense of what's going on in Commerce City?
I think by numbers, I would say it's the second thing right now. I think that beef, that scuffle in training is still lingering in some capacity. And I think the two sides are still working on that relationship and still figuring out whatever trust issues it may be, Eigner's commitment to the team or, you know, whatever understanding he needs to have that just because he's the third highest paid player or he might be a tactical good fit for the system that he isn't automatically going to play, so to speak. It's pretty clear to me in training, at least from what we've seen, granted without Court Ford in there for the better part of the last 2 months, that Tommy Smith has been the best center back in training. And I know fans kind of have this scuffle about, you know, is there a goalkeeper controversy? For me, Tim Howard's been better in training than Zach McMath. For me, Jack Price has been the best center midfielder. For me, Dominic Badji has been the best forward, granted with the other forwards still working on fitness and some injury issues, so to speak. So from that standpoint, you know, there's a lot of other players who, even though they come with cachet or a pedigree from playing internationally or they have bigger salaries, are earning their starts in the lineup. Say what you will about Enzo Martinez. For me, nobody works harder than him in training. You know, he might be on an MLS league minimum contract. He has earned every single minute and every single start he's had this season. And in the eyes on some level for Anthony Hudson, Eigner isn't earning it in terms of his attitude, in terms of his approach to training and such. And that's something that needs to be worked on in some capacity.
Yeah, I mean, the most challenging thing for me in figuring out how bad things are was that this last week, with Blomberg out hurt, with Boateng out hurt, with Gashi out hurt, we were really down on midfielders. So who do we start?
The guy who showed up 4 days ago.
The guy we got from Minnesota, and you know who else made the 18 that week? Sam Hamilton, who they had loaned already down to Colorado Springs. Can you imagine how that phone call went? You call the GM at Colorado Springs Switchbacks, you say, that guy we gave you a week and a half ago, we need him back so that we can put him on the list of players and we can fly him to Sporting Kansas City, not because we actually expect to start him, but because we have a petulant German player and we don't want to honor him by putting him in the 18. That's my raw take, which is like, it's a special kind of FU, language, you know, aside, like, to a player that, like, we're going to call the kid who we loaned to a minor league team to get on a plane, knowing he's not going to play, rather than put you on the bench in Kansas City and honor you with that. I mean, the other way of saying it is possibly to say that Hudson could essentially say to Eigner, we weren't going to play you in Kansas City anyway, so we're not going to waste your time by making you make the plane flight, right? But it still feels weird to me. It feels really, really weird to be in that position. It makes me think that he is already essentially gone, that he is training with the team semi-begrudgingly and will keep training until we just don't see him anymore. And then we don't hear anything for 3 weeks. And then very quietly, the team releases a thing saying Stefan Eigner and the Colorado Rapids have mutually agreed to terminate the contract. Mine is something like version 3 that I was throwing out there. But the problem is, I don't know that he has a whole lot of sale value to Europe at this point. And I'm not sure that the Rapids will be willing to wait all the way till July to do it. Maybe they do, maybe they don't.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. And you know,
I don't think we ever see, my point is, I don't think we ever see Stefan Eigner suit up for the Colorado Rapids again.
I'm not ready to make that kind of a bold hot take, so to speak. I still think there's plenty of potential, and I think that a fit, healthy, and productive Stefan Eigner in the starting 11 for this team makes the Colorado Rapids a better version.
I just think that Hudson saying week after week he knows what he needs to do to get on the field has become exceedingly unsatisfying for me. Like, I don't really buy it anymore. It sounds like him and the media team and the front office sat around and said, what's our go-to line about Stefan Eigner? And the answer was, he knows what he needs to do to get on the field. He just needs to, you know, do X, Y, and Z, and then he'll get back on the field. But it's been weeks. And from what I understand from you at training, from what I've seen at training, he's been very good at training. He's worked very hard at training. So he knows what he needs to do. Doesn't strike me as exactly the right answer because like he's doing it.
Unless that what he needs to do is, you know, discover and invent time travel, go back in time, tell his previous self whatever happened between him and Hudson, don't do that thing or avoid that thing, then come back into the future, and he's starting for the Colorado Rapids, who are of course owned by, our ape overlords in MLS Planet of the Apes. I think is the only logical answer. You know.
So you think he'll be sold to Arsenal in like a very sweetheart deal?
Oh no, I do not think that will happen. But I think
or the Colorado Mammoth.
No.
Who are also owned by Kroenke Sports Enterprises.
No. Anyhow. Okay. Anyhow, Mark. You know, I think I think the other thing that we have here from a financial standpoint that really needs to be understood, you know, based on pending Jack Price, and possibly, in my opinion, Tommy Smith, you know, Eigner's probably the third highest paid player on this team. And, you know, if we go back 5 years, he would be the third DP. So, you know, either he's taking up a third DP slot that the Rapids could use on somebody else, or he's taking up a significant chunk of either GAM or TAM, so to speak. You know, if we prorate his half season salary from 2017, he's making almost $1 million this year, Mark. So that's a lot of TAM that the Rapids could go out and use in the summer on a player who could potentially be productive, who, you know, Porig or who Anthony have connections to, who would actually be a contributing member. So they could go about doing that, or they could use that money in a bunch of other ways. So, you know, obviously they could transfer him out. I think there's a real possibility that he goes on a free. And I think to your point, Mark, maybe the only real, you know, any value, sale value he would have going back to Europe would be a third division team, your German team that, you know, in the next week or so, or in the last week or so, has or is about to clinch promotion to the German second division.
I also wonder if we'll ever know the story, you know, like if he gets...
No, we're never going to know it.
It's possible. And the way these things come out is that after the manager is fired or after the general manager is fired, they either do the tell-all book or they do a tell-all interview and you find out what was really going on. Like the USMNT finding out after the fact from Klinsmann about how he really thought about the team. Or many, many years ago, I think it was the... Was it the 98 or the 2002 U.S. national team that we found out that one of the players was sleeping with one of the other players' wives, and that's why he got dropped right before the World Cup, in which we wound up losing to Iran and not going through the group stage. So these kinds of things where, you know, it comes out long time later. We hope that the Colorado Rapids have a very successful season, that Coach Hudson is there for a very long time, and everything goes really well. We don't need a tell-all book for a very, very long time. But the question of whether we will ever know the answer of exactly what happened with Stefan Agner is a good one.
Hudson seems like the exact opposite of the person who would do that sort of tell-all book or get into the real intricacies of, you know...
I'm still waiting for Pablo Mastroeni's tell-all book.
Yes. I don't think...
for at least him to surface. He's totally disappeared.
I don't think either of them would be the type of personality to do that. I'm not fluent in German, and I don't think that that's something that Stefan Agner would do, and I don't think that sounds like something that Porik would admit to, at least on the record.
I hope not. All this put aside, like, I'm a rabbi, man. I deal with human beings who are having interpersonal conflict. Sometimes it's me and my, you know, board of my synagogue or staff that I work with, and solving interpersonal conflict in a healthy, mature way is really a big part of what I do for a living. So I'm always kind of aghast when I see organizations that can't quite get this thing right. So I hope they can solve it. I hope they can just figure it out.
Yeah, just one other point, folks, for those who are wondering, could the Rapids just completely cut ties? I believe it was as of this year, it's been known as of this year, as it was first exercised by Minnesota United in buying out, Daheem Demidov, who we have criticized many times, or at least I have criticized at least once or twice on this podcast. MLS teams do have the option to buy out at least one contract a year. That comes out of their own personal pocket.
Right.
They can't use that.
Right.
That doesn't count. So the extra money does not count against the salary cap. They cannot use GAM. They cannot use TAM. Basically, Stan Kroenke writes a check out of his own purse book for the total salary amount in guaranteed compensation that Agner or whoever on the Rapids is owned for the 2018 season, and then that contract is essentially null and void for the length or whatever that player effectively becomes a free agent. The team does not retain their rights in the context of MLS or anything whatsoever. Obviously, if that player takes up an international roster spot, Agner does not. That team has that international roster spot opened up.
Yep.
So that is also an option for the Rapids should there not be any lucrative purchasers, or if Agner just says, you know, I want out, I want to retire and go home to Germany, and then they say, okay, well, if you're not going to play with us, we're not going to get any value out of here, here's what we owed you, so to speak, as severance, you know, good luck moving you and your family back to Munich, so to speak. So
yep.
That is an option for the Rapids. I guess the one argument that a lot of fans have on this, Mark, is that, you know, Agner's obviously a big player when he came in. What have the Rapids really been missing? What has Agner bringing that maybe would have prevented this 3-game losing streak, helped the Rapids get that win against Orlando, or hold on to some of the other leads they've had in the past?
I mean, what we know about him from the limited time we saw him play last year, and if you've ever seen him play in Germany, which I hadn't, because the third German league and the second German league don't show up on TV much, but is tremendous passing, over the top, you know, and through balls. He's just an excellent passer. I think Johan Blomberg has provided almost an identical kind of amount of that, but that kind of begged the question for me originally of why did they get Johan Blomberg in the first place? You now have two 30-something, moderately mobile, mostly good passing midfielders. So it was a very weird thing in the beginning. Now I'm starting to feel like having Blomberg is a real savior, because if Agner's not going to make it on the field. But I don't think there's any world, and this is the last thing I'll say on this, this was the challenging thing intellectually for me, I don't think there was any world in which I could envision Skelzengashi, Johan Blomberg, and Stefan Agner getting on the pitch at the same time. They're three of way too much the same player, in terms of not being fast enough, but being extremely good at putting their foot through a ball and putting the ball where you want it. You need a guy who can get to the end of that ball. Maybe that's Castillo and Hairston and Baji, and you're serving, but I think you need mobile midfielders who can dribble out of trouble, fast midfielders who can accelerate past defenders. You can't just have three of the same kind of, I'm going to put it on a platter type guys. I could be wrong, but I don't see any offense where you start those three guys, especially on top of the fact that none of the three of them gives you plus plus defense.
I kind of disagree with you on that front, Mark.
Please
I think if you had, I think Blomberg, I think, has been a solid number eight for the Rapids and has been able to contribute defensively at times. So I think if you have him as a defensively committed number eight in that middle, in the midfield three with Jack Price, and then Eigner kind of as the roaming number 10, and then Gashi up top, so to speak. Now, the downside of that is I think it pretty much locks everybody else. I think at that point it's Baji or Yannick Bolli is your number nine. Joe Mason is your super sub attacking piece. Enzo Martinez or Sam Nicholson are attacking piece. So I think you can have that. I think the problem is that it pretty much locks everybody else into a designated role, both in terms of whether they're starting or coming off the bench and what that role is when, if and when they're playing, so to speak. So I think you can have that. I think it just removes all of the flexibility you had in the squad, so to speak. I think this team would have been a little bit more dynamic, where maybe they were a little bit frustrated, or, you know, like, when things just got stale from an offensive standpoint, you know, like when they needed a spark to counterpunch against Sporting Kansas City, I think they could have had that with Eigner on the field potentially. I think they could have been a little bit more dynamic at times against Toronto FC, you know, maybe had that scoreline would have been a little bit more flattering. I think they would have had some more ideas, particularly in the first half at FC Dallas. I think they probably get that win because I think they score a second goal before Orlando gets their second, you know, two Sundays ago. I don't think, you know, I think Eigner maybe results in them getting a better performance and a better X goals on Saturday against Sporting. I still think they probably lose that game at best by a score of 1-0. But don't tell me for a second that a player that, you know, averaged, you know, that, you know, was pretty even in terms of goals and assists in the German second division, and a player who is pretty decent in his prime in Europa League, would not make an MLS team who has only made the playoffs once in 4 years better offensively. I'm just not sure. And the other thing that I kind of have a question about, to your point, is I'm not sure. Hudson wants structure in that midfield three, and I think Eigner's strength is being able to roam. He's not a he's not a Kaku, he's not a Sasha Kljestan, he's a Nicolò Daro. He needs the freedom to roam in order to be who he is, and I don't know how you marry those two with what Hudson wants to do systematically and what Eigner wants to do. I don't think you want him exclusively as a central playmaker. You want him to be able to move, but then that takes your numbers advantage away from center midfield. So in that sense, you know, in that sense, it's a little bit independent of whatever personal issues or fitness issues have or were or are still going on in 2018, you know, still feels a little bit like a square peg into a slightly ovalish hole, so to speak. Is there anything that we haven't really touched on this, Mark? I think we've touched on everything from what we know that happened, some of our speculations, where we see Eigner's future, so to speak, and then also you know, what potentially the Rapids are missing without him on the field.
I think we handled it.
Okay. On that note, Mark, any other closing thoughts before we head out of here and I help you move a bookshelf, and then we look forward to Saturday's match at DSGP?
Well, are you going to the FC Denver match tonight?
I will be at the FC Denver match tonight. U.S. Open Cup is on, folks. First round proper.
By the time this drops, this game will probably be over, but FC Denver plays Azteca tonight in the first round of U.S. Open. If you're not already a U.S. Open fan, guys, this is where your hipster soccer cred comes into play. Get on board the early rounds of the U.S. Open. It's I went to even the play-in games from last fall. They're amazing. The level of kind of regular level of soccer players, you know, average semi-pro, you know, pubs league soccer players is really, really important. They're killing themselves in a huge, you know, knockout format, and they're desperate to get in. So if you can't catch this game, catch the next one, FC Denver or Azteca, in the U.S. Open.
Excellent stuff, Mark Goodman. Listeners, we'll see you next week.